Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
You're listening to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. This month, the city of Boston released a database with information about the lives of people enslaved in the city. It's part of ongoing efforts to tell the stories of thousands of people who have until now largely been erased from the city's history. So we're revisiting a conversation from last year when city employees and volunteers excavated the grounds of the Shirley Eustis House on Shirley Street in Roxbury, looking for remnants of slave quarters. And they found them. It's part of WBUR's deep dive into Boston's history and culture through our field guide. So we had a conversation with Boston City archaeologist Joe Bagley and Reverend Willie Bodrick II, the senior pastor at 12th Baptist Church in Roxbury, about the excavation at the time and why it matters to our history. And when we talked, I asked Joe when he realized that the city had found something special.
It took us a while, to be honest. We were expecting to see a foundation or the basement of this building really clearly. And as we dug down, all we were finding were platforms and surfaces and a pavement of stone. And so it took us about halfway through the dig to realize that the thing that we had been finding was, in fact, the basement level.
And so we're talking about the Shirley Eustis House. And as I understand it, Joe, what happened was we discovered that the house used to be somewhere else, which meant that the basement of that house might, in fact, still exist. And so you started digging up little swaths of a parcel of land where that basement may have existed. And the thought was that there'd be, a winter kitchen, a summer kitchen, and potentially quarters that had housed enslaved people.
Correct.
And so when you were like, oh, wait a minute, this is it. Tell me what that was like. I mean, you're a city archaeologist in Boston. As far as America goes, we actually have history here, right?
Right.
So what would it mean for you to find something like this?
Well, the first piece of that story came up on our very first day in the form of a cowrie shell. And that was a traditional West African artifact. And that was when it kind of hit me. Like, this is real. This is the story. It may be here, but more importantly, it's already turning up. That story, that voice is already starting to come up on the site.
Does it whisper to you? No, I'm serious. Yeah. Do you almost hear it?
It's more like a weight that you feel of that responsibility to be like, the story is here and now I have to tell that story, but more importantly, work with the folks whose story that represents to find out what's the best way to tell that story.
So that is a perfect chance then to start to bring in a second voice here. Also here in studio to the Reverend Willie Bodrick II, senior pastor at 12th Baptist Church in Roxbury, which is just about a mile from the property that we're talking about. Always great to have you here. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Tiziana, and I'm glad to be here in this conversation.
What does it mean to you that, and we'll come back, Joe, in a minute to the we think we found it, mm-hmm. right? What does it mean to you that we think we found it?
Well, you know, to me, this is really a conversation that we're having in Boston writ large around Black erasure, narrative erasure, and how we tell a new story. How we sing a new song. As I was talking with Joe earlier, you know, these are people. These are stories that are being both excavated but also being lifted. And if we're going to think critically about who we are as a city in this particular era, in this particular moment, where we're seeing the erasure of and retelling of slave narratives all across this country, it's important for us to sort of be a beacon of light. To talk about the dark side of Boston and actually own the fact that not only slavery wasn't just a Southern issue, it was a Northern issue. It was a city of Boston issue, and we have to reconcile that and wrestle with that if we want to get towards the healing. And so it's interesting, not excited. I'm interested in how we come to terms with this. And how does this open up other conversations around where we are as a city writ large? And as a church who's been around, whose history is tied to the African Meeting House, we were known as the Fugitive Slave Church under Reverend Leonard Grimes, who really worked. You know, he went to prison for 2 years for helping escape, you know, free people who were trying to escape to slavery. And so, you know, we are part of that liberation spirit of what's happening here in the city. And I think, you know, we're inextricably tied to that past. And there's something we can do about it in this present.
We're speaking with Reverend Willie Bodrick II from 12th Baptist Church and Joe Bagley, who's the city archaeologist for the city of Boston, about the discovery of some
structure underground that you went looking for, Joe, thinking that it represents former quarters of enslaved people from the Shirley Eustis House. Bring us the names of who we know or think may have been enslaved there.
Sure. We know of at least five individuals who were enslaved by Governor William Shirley, who was the person responsible for having the house get built, and also his son-in-law, Eliakim Hutchinson. The first person, and four of them were children. The first person was an infant named Jane, who may have not survived the time when the house was built. So she may have been just before that time. We know there was an infant named Nanny, who was baptized at King's Chapel in 1753 and died very shortly after, days later. And she was actually a servant of Governor Shirley's daughter, Catherine, at the age of 18 months. And then later, Governor Shirley's daughter, Elizabeth, and her husband, Eliakim, had two children enslaved at the home, Affy and Caesar, and a man named Thomas Scipio.
You know, when you talked a minute ago, Joe, I'm just going to be honest with you. You know, I asked you, can you hear the cowrie whispering? And you said you could feel the weight as I hear you say those names. And I can see it on you. The weight of breathing back into our conscience. The black enslaved people, Reverend Bodrick, that you said were erased. It is a moment to confront ourselves. We have historically loved our narrative of being anti-slavery in Boston. We have struggled with the counterfactual to that narrative explicitly over the last few years. How will it shake us up to know these names, to have this space, to be able to walk by, and whether it remains uncovered, and I understand, Joe, you have covered it back up for now.
We're doing that right now, yep.
Yeah. Or whatever we decide to do as a community, that weight is there now. Yeah. So how do we... What's the verb? Is it use that weight, respect? What is even the verb?
Well, I think acknowledging that this is real is the first step. And I'm pretty sure Joe has had to deal with this, of people who don't want to grapple with the fact that the narrative that they learned or have believed is not true. And so I think some of that is that the first step is just acknowledging the reality that their names to these people who had stories, who had lives, and acknowledging that there are other institutions implicated in this great system that oppressed people, humanity, black people specifically, and that goes beyond banks, it goes beyond railroads, it goes beyond you know colleges and universities, it's churches that benefited, it's other institutions, it's
Old North
government.
Church has come forward with that, mm-hmm.
I mean, even King's Chapel, you know, it's an interesting story. You know, Reverend Leonard Grimes, when he was the pastor, the first pastor of 12th Baptist Church, he, you know, wrote to Deacon Pitts at King's Chapel, which is why it jumped out to me when I saw that. He wrote to Deacon Pitts to fight on behalf of Anthony Burns, who was an enslaved person who escaped to Boston that they were going to send back into slavery. These histories live with us. I want to acknowledge Reverend Joy Fallon, who brought this to our attention, and she sent me the letter that Reverend Grimes wrote in the 1800s. This is a real thing. I think the second piece of this is us telling the story. Like, the first part of respect is actually telling the story. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing right now, creating space to actually have the conversation, is of great importance. But it's also to tie those narratives to what's happening today. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, we can tell a story of gentrification. We can tell a story of oppression here in the city of Boston. We can tell a story of folks being pushed out, of folks losing their access and opportunity to community and to the spaces, or to even live in the city of Boston. These stories are not, you know, far in between from the history that we know exists. And it's also to really hopefully to baptize our conscience, mm-hmm. to hopefully walk into a newness of who we are. And to acknowledge, in my space, to repent in some ways, in many ways, and to move differently, to tell a different story about Boston. And I think we can lead in that in this country, which needs it right now. You know, I heard Governor DeSantis telling a very flawed narrative of the American Revolution and this, you know, history of slavery. We need to tell these stories. It is important and incumbent upon us.
So, you know, I don't want to move to a bloodless space with our next question. I want to stay in the heart of where you're pulling us, Reverend Bodrick. I am amazed by the power, Joe, of archaeology to pull us into this space, right? Mm-hmm. To say this is the house, to your point, Reverend Bodrick, about a flawed narrative of the American Revolution, this is the house of a Massachusetts governor right now. This was a royally appointed mm-hmm. governor prior mm-hmm. to the revolution, but that our governance structure enslaved people, mm-hmm. that is a piece of what exists in Roxbury buried under the ground and our conversation. One, are there people mad at you for this dig? And two, what do you think your job is next? Mm.
So I think I've been getting a lot of positive feedback for this dig and some of our other projects, like an exhibit that we're planning at Faneuil Hall on the role of Boston in enslavement. A lot of the challenging feedback that we're getting comes along the lines of, what right do you have to tell my story? Mm. And it's a fair question to ask. And so a lot of what we're doing is working directly with community members to ask them, like, what is your story? What would you like us to tell? And can you be part of the actual writing of that story so that we can make sure these voices are heard?
And that's quite different than mm-hmm. how we would have done this even 10 years ago.
Absolutely. And archaeology is changing too. I mean, we're going to be doing a site later this year where there's been two archaeological digs before, never even acknowledging the presence of enslaved people on a site. And when we did the background research, we uncovered many. And that's another project that we're going to be doing later this year that it's even within the field of archaeology, which tries to uncover hidden stories, missed important stories of this of a place that had enslaved people. And so we're really trying to come to terms with what has the field of archaeology, what has historians, what have communities looked beyond based on large, well-recognized, internationally recognized places and people, because the story is more complicated than that. And archaeology can go to a place that people have walked by every single day for their entire lives and say, you've missed something. And here's where we can use this tool of archaeology to pull a story out of the ground and bring light to that, or even question the written past to say, well, you can write anything you want down, but what does the ground tell us? This kind of unvarnished, this unedited version.
But literally in the dirt.
Literally in the dirt, yeah.
Well, I think that's so important, particularly because, you know, stories tell us who we are, mm-hmm. but they also give us opportunities to tell us who we want to be. And I think that's where we are in this particular moment. And Joe, I'm telling you now, we're availing 12 Baptist Church to have those conversations mm-hmm. to the city of Boston, to you, and to bring folks into community with these narratives to really talk, you know, and think critically about this. One of the things that we're trying to do, we'll be celebrating 185 years of 12 Baptist Church in 2025, and we're building towards that mark, 220 years since the African Meeting House. And so we're working towards building a museum in the city, in the community of Boston, in Roxbury, here in the city of Boston, to celebrate those history and to lift stories like the stories that Joe has literally dug into the ground to tell a new story, not only about those persons who lived in their lives, their legacies, their families, their posterity, but also to tell a story about Boston. Mm-hmm. Who are we? Who do we want to be? Mm-hmm. And how do we become? And I think that's so important. And trust me, the Shirley Eustis House isn't the only site. Mm-mm. Right. You know, this it's the beginning, not the end. And I think that's the conversation we need to have. And we need to reconcile that. And in order to do that, we need to create the space to talk about it. We need the people who are deeply affected by mm-hmm. it to be in conversation and not only just leading the work, guiding it. Mm-hmm. Right. And talking about this. And I think, you know, this is the opportunity that we have to convene. And so people want to move beyond this. Mm-hmm. But it takes hard work to go through the tough conversations that are necessary to get us there.
So it's striking. We're speaking with Reverend Willie Bodrick, the second of 12th Baptist Church in Roxbury, Joe Bagley, who's the city archaeologist for the city of Boston. So, Joe, when you walk out of here, what happens next for this dig, which you've covered mm-hmm. now or are in the process of covering up? And in a, you know, a few sentences, what's your next step?
This site, we did not dig into it. We dug down to it because our main goal was to decide or to find out is the basement here where the enslaved spaces were in the kitchens. Now that we've been able to say they're there, the next goal is not to dig it up. The next goal is to find out with the community, have a conversation with the community, to ask the question, should this be exposed more? Should we dig through the floors? There's places in Maryland, for example, where enslaved spaces and basements have had ritual caches, secretively hidden things in the floors around hearths and thresholds in kitchens. There could be sacred, significant things underground. And I don't think I have an inherent right as an archaeologist to go dig those up. But there could be something in those spaces that could tell a story. So it's not up to me. I think it's up to the community to decide, is this a space that we leave completely intact and don't go through? Or is this a place that we go further into it? But right for now, the site's protected. Nothing will happen to it.
That was Joe Bagley, the archaeologist for Boston, and Reverend Willie Bodrick II. He's the senior pastor at 12th Baptist Church in Roxbury that we were with us in Studio 2 last year.